Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
There's a skill of learning how to hire those great people, managing them. You're then able to hire them relatively low cost. You can get twice or three times as much done as you could personally, and you're a much more valuable resource to a company or as an entrepreneur. So the general concept is, instead of just you doing it yourself, make sure you have lots of people that are available for you to project to do certain projects with, whether it's design, whether it's getting your website up, whether it's SEO work. And you need to develop the skill of finding those people and managing and working with them, because it's a very, very valuable skill.
Hi there, innovator. It's really great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust too that you enjoyed my conversations with Zach McGill of Perk Health and with Lindsay Dix of Celebrity Sites. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Rob Rawson. He's the CEO and founder of Staff.com, which is software for actionable productivity metrics, and of TimeDoctor.com, which is a time tracking and productivity application for remote teams. Rob originally trained as a medical doctor and always had the desire to start and build his own business when he discovered he could make more money from his internet business than working as a doctor. He then switched to becoming a full-time entrepreneur. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal client. That requires absolute clarity about who your ideal clients are and how you can help them. To help you get that clarity about your ideal client, take a look at our Marketing Master Mini Class, where in less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity on your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master Mini Class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Rob talked to me about building and running a remote team of over 80 people spread in 31 different countries. He described his effective hiring process for remote teams and also how to deal with cultural differences between people in teams spread over so many countries and how to keep strong communication going. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Rob Rawson. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Sydney in Australia, Rob Rawson, who's the CEO and co-founder of Time Doctor, which is a time tracking and productivity app for remote teams. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Rob. It's a great privilege to have you here as my guest.
It's great to chat with you.
Now, Rob, you started your professional career as a medical doctor, which is really interesting how you then transitioned into an online business. I think you started an internet business on the side and then discovered that you could actually make more money and have more influence running that career full-time, and then you transitioned and became a full-time business owner and entrepreneur. And during that journey, you started building remote teams, which I think was where Time Doctor had its little genesis, but we'll hear a lot more about that in talking to you today. So I'm really looking forward to talking more about the lessons you've learned on that journey and all about Time Doctor today. But before we do that, give us a little bit more about that background, how you got started and what were some of the pivotal moments.
Sure. Well, I was always entrepreneurial and loved starting businesses, was trying lots of different things, marketing businesses, even while I was in medical school, actually. So I was just doing that in part-time while I was a doctor, and then it eventually led to a full-time career and business outside of medicine. So it's quite hard to be a doctor as well as in business. It's really something you have to dedicate your life to, being a doctor. So made a decision to leave, even though it is an amazing profession. But as you mentioned, now I'm more in this kind of remote team philosophy, and it's something that's really interesting because it is growing. There's a lot of companies that are out there that are promoting it, really mainstream people, even like Bill Gates recently was saying that remote is the way to go and all companies should be working remotely, and a number of other very prominent business people that are saying that it is the way to go. So I think it's a little bit of a turning point now that it's becoming more mainstream, that companies are actually able to work remotely and have people around the world. And so I'm excited about that whole movement. And we actually have a conference as well that we created about that movement. It was in Bali and we moved it to the US. But it's a whole conference on how do you do that, because it's a little bit bewildering for people that just don't understand. How do I manage these people? How do I do it all? And so we get people in the room who have been doing it with large teams. There's some billion-dollar companies now that have remote teams, completely remote, all from home. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there and explore some more. But I mean, yeah. I mentioned to you before we started recording that back in my corporate career, I was running remote teams even before the internet. And it was partly because it was a global company that had decentralized large aspects of both its manufacturing and its technical support and research and development. And I was in that technical support and research and development area running kind of teams in five or six different locations, but they were physical locations in laboratories. So each location had its own kind of group there, and they were part of a bigger team. And today, I think what you're talking about is a lot more around people working from home. So what do you see as why is there this push, you know, going up to even the big corporations like Microsoft looking at this is the way of the future?
Yeah. I don't know that Microsoft has a complete remote policy yet, but Bill Gates is no longer running Microsoft, but he actually promotes it. So the reason that they're doing that, I think the number one reason is actually the availability of talent. So if you look even Sydney, it's got 5 million people. It seems like you'd find enough talent there. It's actually very hard to hire a good developer, to hire the people that you need. And if you're trying to build a tech business in particular and you're trying to hire developers, it's so hard. So if you open yourselves up to going, well, I could hire from maybe the West Coast of the US, the time zone's not that bad. I could hire from anywhere in Asia, the time zone's pretty similar. So it's really opens up the talent pool massively. And there are different reasons that people do, or even it's just the entire Australia. You know, if I'm living in Sydney, why do I have to hire just from Sydney? So for me, the number one benefit and reason people do it is so that you can expand your talent pool and that you can get people from anywhere. And also there's a lot of people that just want to work remotely. They like that flexibility. They just don't want to have to drive to work. Some cities are horrible traffic and pollution. Yeah. And so you don't want to have to drive for an hour each way. You know, there's people in Silicon Valley, because it's so expensive to live there, they drive for 1.5 hours to get to work and 1.5 hours. So it's like 3 hours a day they're in their car. Mm. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, where we are even, we live about an hour and a bit out of Melbourne, but in peak hour, because there's just one major freeway that goes in, a lot of people work in the center of Melbourne in the city, CBD district. And it's some days it's 2 hours to 3 hours commute one way. And I know from you know, my corporate work that I referred earlier, some of the big cities in Asia, it was the norm for people to be traveling two lots of 3 hours every day, 6 hours a day commuting. When you think of that, that's just horrendous.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So in terms of course, one of the other big advantages is that where you can find the right talent, you can outsource to countries where the cost of living is much lower than where you are, and therefore the cost of salaries is going to be much better for you, for your business. And that's a huge advantage, I think, particularly for people starting out.
Yep. Yeah, I think it is an advantage. It depends on the type of business. I think you'll see a lot of these very large businesses, like the billion-dollar businesses. They're not actually like GitHub, for example, and GitLab, and there's a few others out there. They're huge businesses, but they're not hiring at that lower salary end. That's not the reason they're doing it. But a lot of the people who are starting out in business and they just have their first side business that they're trying to start something, they don't have a budget to hire someone at $100,000 a year. They might have a budget for $20,000 a year, and so hiring somebody in Asia may be more affordable, and you can get some great talent. We actually have our number one destination for our company. We have over 80 people in 31 countries. Could you believe it? And the number one destination is the Philippines, because they're great at English. Their quality of spoken and written English is fantastic, and they also, the quality of their work is great. They may not be able to find people for all types of work, but certainly for customer support and recruitment, lots of areas, we've found great people in the Philippines. But we also have people in Pakistan, then we have Canada, and all around Europe, etc.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that you had people in over 30 locations, and that's obviously a challenge to manage all that, which I guess is one of the reasons where Time Doctor kind of was born. So tell us a little bit about the background of Time Doctor and why you developed that.
Yeah, it is a tool that helps in this situation when you're managing remotely. We also use lots of other tools as well, like the video conferencing tools. There's so many of them. But Time Doctor was born out of the idea that I had an office in the Philippines, and I wanted to get rid of the office, and I wanted to actually just leave the Philippines. I was living there, and I had 30 people in the office, and I just was sick of living there. So I just didn't want to have that office. I didn't want to have that draw to keep coming back to it. And plus the expense, you know, it's quite expensive to run that office every month. Compared to the salaries, it was a very large expense. So I just decided to get rid of it, have everyone work from home, and then have the software which tracks time and also keeps people a bit accountable as well. It has some level of accountability in it.
Yeah. All right. Well, one of the things I'm really curious about is what are your keys to building a culture of excellence within the business where you've got people in over 30 different locations? And I'm guessing there's lots of contact between those individuals, right, in terms of some of the project work that you're doing.
Yeah. So we have to overcompensate for the fact that you're not bumping into people. So if you're in an office, you just naturally run into people and you have conversations, but that doesn't happen remotely. So you can have a situation where you're not communicating enough. So you need to have structured meetings. Certainly for all my direct reports, I have a weekly meeting, and then I have for each team, they often have daily meetings, either via video or sometimes just chat. It does vary a bit, but I prefer to be the situation where there's at least a stand-up meeting for 5-10 minutes via video, kind of similar to where you're in an office, you're getting to see people, you know, face-to-face for a few minutes every day, and absolutely necessary to do that at least once a week. So that's starting to compensate, but then you have your chat room open. We use Slack for that, but you can use other tools as well, and where you're just constantly chatting with people. Then that can become overwhelming, of course. So you can get too distracted from the chat. So you have to have this balance between what you call asynchronous and synchronous communication. Do you want to chat immediately in real time, which is like a video call or text chat? Or do you want to have some communication which is more thought out, structured, where the other person can reply later on and take time to reply? So we have a balance of those two things, the written communication where they have time to reply, and the meetings. And depending on the situation. It depends on what kind of communication style you need. But absolutely, you need to work on that communication and the structure and make sure that people are not forgotten.
Yeah.
So there's lots of tips that you kind of learn through the years, but it's not really rocket science. I mean, it's sort of similar to, like you said before, you had people in different offices. They're actually in an office, but they need to still communicate together and work together.
Yeah, that's right. Now, you mentioned Slack, which is kind of like an instant messaging kind of application.
Yes.
And then the more thought out written responses. Do you use email for that, or do you have a different way of managing that?
We actually use Basecamp for the thought out written messages. Okay. And so you can use email. System. Yeah, it's a project management tool. There's lots of other project management tools you can use. Basecamp's relatively inexpensive and it has a lot of different functionality in it. But there's lots of tools you can use, but the advantage of using a tool versus just email is that you can go back to the threads. You can, if there's new people that join, they can join that project and they can see the previous conversations. Whereas email, it kind of gets lost in this big, hole of email.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, we're using Asana for project management. That's what we try to do. Sort of pushing hard to get people to have those communications in Asana for the very reasons you outlined, and email is like things just get buried in email.
And I love Asana as well. It's a fantastic tool.
All right. Now, in terms of hiring people remotely, what's your process for that? How do you go about that, and what's different to hiring people remotely than perhaps where you might do it in the same office, where you have the opportunity once you get to shortlist to have face-to-face meetings and perhaps get a really good sense of who the person is you're talking to by a lot of the nonverbal communication that you're picking up on?
Yeah, well, one of the big differences is that you get a lot more applicants. So if you're hiring in Sydney for a developer, I might get 5 to 10 applicants and they're all terrible. But if I'm hiring for the same position remotely, I might get 200, 300, 400 applicants. And some of them, or still quite a lot of them, are terrible, but some are very good. So the volume is a big difference. There's a lot of places that you can post. We use, depends on the type of jobs. There's some job posting boards that are specifically for posting remotely. For example, WeWorkRemotely.com is one. Angel.co is like another one that you can post for remote jobs. And even LinkedIn, if you put on the job the words remote and telecommute and things like that, people will find it and they'll apply for that job. So then the other thing that we do is actually look at what are the exact skills that they need in the job, and can we do a test that exactly matches the type of thing that they're going to be doing. For example, if they're a support person, we want to give them a test that's a support test, a quick test they can do, ask them some questions that customers might have had that doesn't require them to know the product yet, but they can still answer those questions, and it gives us an idea if they're able to answer in good quality English and answer the questions adequately. So I find it's hard to do too many interviews. That's one problem with when you've got so many applicants. You don't want to be getting hundreds of interviews. You're not going to be able to assess people that way. So I try not to assess people through interviews. Sometimes for high level positions, I'm not quite sure how to assess them, so I end up doing an interview. But we try to use tests where possible instead of interviews. So that's a couple of the things that we do.
Yeah. And so how many people would you put through the test then if you get several hundred applicants, let's say?
So if it was a developer position and we got 400 applicants, then we would filter down based on their salary requirements and on their resume, just to see if they completely don't have the experience that we need. Then we might give quite a lot of people an initial test, maybe up to 50 people. And then from that test, then we might filter that down to to 5 to 10 that have done a reasonable result, have interviews with those, and then go on from there. So it depends on the job and depends on the test. If it's a very difficult test and it takes longer to do, then you want to do it further down the application process. You could do a simple test right at the beginning that doesn't take too much time. It's sort of unfair to ask too many people to do this very long test unless they're far down the application process.
So I guess the initial test is really about responsiveness and are they able to follow instructions more than anything else?
It can be for some jobs, but usually where that would be for more of a lower level job, like we'd be assuming that they're responsive in all cases. And we do need to assess that, though, that is important. But there's a little bit of a give and take, though. So for the very high level people, they might not be responsive because they're very busy and they've got 5 different offers that they can take. So you can't always just expect the person to be jump at your every beck and call, because I'm trying to hire the best level of talent, level of talent, and those people are not going to just immediately. Sometimes you've got to go after them rather than they're going after you.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're not sitting around doing nothing and waiting for you. They may already be in employ. All right. Now, one of the things I know you talked about recently in some podcasts that I listened to is remote sales and bringing people on to conduct sales. And I'm guessing that was for Time Doctor, remotely through phone and other means. So do you have a big remote sales team?
It's not that small. We have probably 6 to 8 people, and we have also some researchers engaged in sales. It's mostly inbound, so the leads that are coming through our website and they're contacting them. I do think that sales is the most difficult to get right remotely, and especially for cold sales where you're going out to somebody that doesn't even know about you, then that's very difficult because you're going to get a lot of rejection. And if you're sitting from home and just call after call getting rejected, that's very hard to do in an isolated environment. So I'm not yet convinced that, and this is one area where I think it's a little more difficult to do it remotely. So I think that inbound sales where they have the leads is definitely possible to do remotely, and we're doing a reasonable job at that. I think we're trying to improve at that at the moment and get that right, but it's definitely working and it's succeeding. So it's something that we're still working on.
Yeah. So what would the process look like and what would those people be doing?
We tend to separate it out into 3 separate things. Firstly, research. So they're researching the details of the person because we don't always have their phone number, and also researching if they're qualified. Do they have more than 20 people in the company? Then that would be a lower salary person in the Philippines mostly, or in South America. And then the second stage is an SDR, sales development rep. And this is a standard kind of separation for sales. And the sales development rep is making an appointments for the account executive. The account executive is closing. So you have the appointment setter basically and the closer. And the appointment setter is making sure the person is qualified over the phone, giving them some information, setting them up for the appointment, and then the closer gets on the phone and sets up a demo. It's actually not a demo, but it's explaining the product and setting them up to use the product and trial it for a while, and then at the end of the trial, seeing if they want to actually purchase it.
Yeah, so doing the follow-up as well.
Yeah.
All right. No, well, that's pretty comprehensive system, and it's nicely structured in a way that you've separated the different roles.
Yeah. Well, we started out, I mean, for sales, for software, there is some software that's more sales driven, that's some that's more sign up from the website driven, if you know what I mean. So our software in the beginning, we didn't have any salespeople. So people would just sign up on the website and use the software. So we only introduced salespeople later on. to increase the conversion, to make sure that people were getting their needs met, all their questions answered, this sort of thing. So the salespeople, in theory, shouldn't be really trying to shove something down the customer's throat. They're really just trying to help them make the decision and understand the product and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the role of good salespeople, regardless of whether you do it remotely or not, right?
Right, yeah, true.
Yeah, I think a lot of people misunderstand sales. We're not all used car salesmen.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned 30-plus countries where your team is based. So what are some of those countries, and what's unique about the different countries that you have people based in?
Well, it's interesting because there are cultural differences. And we've got a lot of people in Asia. The Philippines, I mentioned, is number one. Pakistan is number two. Then we do have just random countries that you wouldn't think you'd have someone in. So we've got Serbia, we've got Mauritius, we've got it's hard for me to remember all of the countries right now, but there's certainly just it's not that we're trying to hire from all of these countries, but it just happens naturally that we take all of the applicants, and whoever's the best applicant, then we hire that person. So we now have a few people in Nigeria. Actually, we've got three people in Nigeria. And I was probably slightly biased against Africa in general and Nigeria, basically because I have a friend who was over there, and he said it was very hard for him to hire great talented people when he was there. But Nigeria has 170 million people or something like that, and there's some extremely talented people there. So it's there are certain challenges, like internet could be a challenge there, but there's definitely a lot of very talented people. So the cultural differences, some of the major ones is that the deference to authority. So in Asian cultures and a lot of other cultures, they're very deferent to authority. They won't challenge you and tell you that you're wrong. And so they'll just basically go along with whatever you say, even if they totally disagree with it. So one of the things I try to do is to make sure the team is aware, look, you really do have to disagree with me. And in fact, to kind of freak people out a little bit, if you're not disagreeing with me, you failed in your job, which is someone from the Philippines, it's kind of hard for them to hear that if they're not, if they haven't sort of been indoctrinated to the new way of thinking, because culturally the boss is kind of telling you what to do. Whereas I'm trying to introduce a philosophy where, well, I want you to tell me what to do, and then we'll work it out together. So that depends on the culture. I mean, in Russia and Ukraine, that's not the case. They're quite happy to tell you that you're wrong. So that's good. And then in other cultures, they're more sensitive about hurting someone's feelings. So in the United States, even, it's actually people are very sensitive about the feelings. So you can't say, oh, you did the wrong thing, because it's got to be sandwiched a little bit, massaged. Oh, you're doing great overall, but you know, you can correct in this. Whereas if you look at France, or you look at Russia again, those two countries, they'd be like, you screwed up, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's their normal management style. They don't think well, I'm just being direct. What do you want me to do? You want me to sugarcoat it? So that's something that's even within Western cultures, between France and the United States, there's a big difference.
Yeah, well, those differences are really important, and when you're working across so many different countries, it requires a lot of flexibility, right? You sort of got to remember who are you talking to, and what do you need to do here? So you mentioned that with all these different countries, it's not by design that you have people there. It's more that those are the best for a particular role you're filling. But one of the challenges you highlighted was internet. And I know in the past, that's something that I've run into as a challenge, internet connectivity and speed, and also the reliability of power. How do you manage that, or do you kind of clarify that in the hiring process?
Yeah, we do assess for it in the hiring process. We look at the person's internet speed. And generally, if you're hiring at a higher level, somebody at a higher salary, they're going to have a high quality internet in Nigeria, etc. If you're hiring at the very lowest salary levels, then you're starting to see that be more of a problem because they've got the really cheap internet. They can't afford something higher. So it depends on the person and the salary level. That's not a huge issue, I think. The internet, I don't find it's a huge issue. I think the time zones is an issue once you start getting into three different time zones. So you've got Asia, United States, and Europe. And then if you want to try to meet all together, then one of you has to be meeting at midnight. So that's a problem. At the moment, I'm doing several meetings at 6 a.m. my time. And that's for United States and Canada mostly. But then we also have some people from Europe. And there are other people that really couldn't even be in that meeting, like the guy from Mauritius. That's still going to be 3 a.m. for him. So, or, you know, midnight for him. So it's just really too hard to do regular meetings. And for my all hands meeting, because I like to have an all hands meeting once a month. So that's challenging. And I'm probably at the moment I'm doing it about 10 p.m. I might have to move it even later to 11 p.m. or 12 p.m. midnight my time, because I'm in the unique time zone, which is kind of latest in the world. Australia is kind of to the latest. So if I'm at midnight, it does accommodate most people, I think everyone at midnight. So but I don't like to work in midnight. It's not like just once a month I can do it, but I definitely don't like doing that.
So do you ever get everyone together physically in a location?
We have had whole company meetings. We've done one whole company meeting, then we've had leadership meetings. This year, we're having more individual team meetings and a couple of just meetings. We've got a product meeting and a marketing meeting, so we don't have as much the whole company meeting. It's just got to be a bit too many people. I mean, most companies that are similar to us, they do have whole company meetings. So they normally do. But for us, because we've got so many people that have visa issues, because we've got so many people in countries like Pakistan, they all have to get visas no matter where the meeting is. And it just becomes really hard. And it's very expensive as well for all the flights, etc. So I'm not sure we're going to do it. We might do it every second or third year or something like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is fascinating. Rob, I could go on for ages exploring how you manage the remote teams. And it's a subject that I've always been fascinated by and obviously had a lot of experience with in the past, but also still working with remote teams now. And I think, as you pointed out, the possibilities that it raises in terms of how much talent you have. And the other thing, I think it, you know, in terms of the people that are working remotely, it opens up a whole lot of possibilities for them. I mean, if you take, for example, people that are raising young families and want to spend more time with their young families, and that's potentially in conflict with a big corporate career. So if they're able to work from home in a job that's fulfilling and gives them a meaningful contribution and also a salary that enables them to sustain their lifestyle, then that's a win-win for them as well.
Yeah. And that can be a reason why a lot more companies in Australia or the United States are actually going to move towards this, just because their employees are demanding it. And if they want to hold on to that talent, then they're going to have to allow them to at least work remotely one day a week. I think the idea of having the young children is an interesting one. I think it's difficult if you have a very young children and you're looking after them at home. It's very difficult to work effectively. So we look at that carefully, because if somebody is the primary caregiver, they don't have anyone else looking after the kids and they're trying to work from home, I've found that not to work personally.
Yeah.
If the kids are at school, however, no problem, because they're taken care of most of the day. And then the time is flexible when you have – we also have very flexible working hours. So you usually have to have a few hours when you're overlapping, but then you can have the rest of the time you can do whenever you want to. So as long as you're not having to look after the one-year-old like for the entire day, then it's okay and it works.
Hmm. All right. Well, as I say, this is absolutely fascinating and I could go on talking for ages, but I'm aware of the time. So I think it's a good point to move on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience who are primarily leaders and innovators in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions and hopefully you'll give us some really snappy, insightful answers that will inspire people to go and do something awesome today.
Okay.
So what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I like the idea of choosing the area. And I was going to say just taking the time to be innovative, but you know, honestly, everyone knows that. But I think it's choosing the area that you're going to be innovative in and that you're actually good at being innovative in. So for example, for me, I'm not very creative in terms of something visual, you know, art, but I am very creative with my business. I actually like creating split tests, ideas on the website. This really excites me. So definitely creating the time and choosing the right thing to focus your innovation on.
That's great advice. And it highlights that it's innovation can be improving things in all aspects. It doesn't have to be just the creative side of it in terms of, you know, what we typically categorize as creative, like the arts or visual.
Yeah.
All right. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I actually have a process for ideas where when I get up in the morning and nobody's up yet, I sit in a lie in bed, and I believe that the most creative time or for new ideas is when you're just woken up. So I lie in bed and then I think about, I have some questions that I want answered, and I just ask my brain to answer them while I'm still in bed, sort of half asleep. And I come up with really good answers at that time that I'm not able to come up with. I also, if I do happen to, during the middle of the night, have ideas, you know, I wake up and I have ideas, I always write them down.
Yeah.
I write them down actually in our app, but it can be any app that you just write them down in the middle of the night. And some of my best ideas are also in the middle of the night. So that's generally how I'm coming up with great ideas.
Yeah, I like the writing them down in the middle of the night. I find I have to do that because otherwise I can't get back to sleep. I've got to get them out of my head. Yeah,
absolutely another reason to do it, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now, you mentioned one resource there. Do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
For business in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like recording a video on your screen and then being able to share it with people, and also recording images. Now, there's several tools for this. There's one called Use Loom, and there's another one that I use as Screencast as well. So, or Snagit and Use Loom are the two ones that I can recommend. But the whole process where you can record the video, you can annotate, you can then share it very quickly with a link. If people are not already doing that, it's really critical for remote communication.
Yeah, that's great. We do that all the time. And that was a big breakthrough for me when I started doing that. And also just record yourself doing some process and then have the team document that, so it works really well.
Yeah.
Okay, now what's the best way to keep a project on track?
It's to, for me, what we've started doing now is having weekly metrics, and we pick a metric for each person in the team, and one or two or three metrics. And then we report on those weekly, and it has to be weekly, not monthly, so that there's a regular feedback cycle that you see that you're getting on track. And then we have, in that meeting, we also have a rock task, which is one to three things that you're going to do for this quarter, and then what is the next step. So in that meeting, it's following up on the next step from last week, and what's the next step from this week. So it's not a whole large list of things. It's focusing on just one thing, and it's not that's the only thing that they're doing, But because you're focusing on that one thing, it's keeping the meeting focused. It's keeping the project and the quarterly rock focused. What is the big thing that you're focusing on for this quarter? And what is the one thing that you're doing this week? And that I find effective when I've tried to do follow-ups for like, oh, what's the 5 things that you do? What's the 10 things that you do? Mm. That could be okay in a one-on-one meeting, but for the group meetings and the group follow-ups, I do it as a one thing that you're following up on for the quarter and for the week. And that's really effective. And the 1 to 3 metrics that you've reporting on every week that you're responsible for.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good way to do it. Yeah, like it. All right. Now, what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think it depends on the business. It's really hard to say for general business, for business in general. But if you're talking about for your personal skills, which also can relate to your business, I would say learning how to project manage using multiple resources, multiple low-cost resources online, which is similar to the remote that we're talking about. But if you're able to get twice as much done by hiring someone on a platform like Upwork or freelancer.com, and you not just hiring one person, but hiring 5 or 10 people. If you figure out the skill of how to do that, and it is a skill of learning how to hire those great people, managing them, you're then able to hire them relatively low cost. You can get twice or three times as much done as you could personally, and you're a much more valuable resource to a company or as an entrepreneur. So the general concept is, instead of just you doing it yourself, make sure you have lots of people that are available for you to project, to do certain projects with, whether it's design, whether it's getting your website up, whether it's SEO work. And you need to develop the skill of finding those people and managing and working with them, because it's a very, very valuable skill. So that is probably one of the biggest ways you can differentiate yourself. It's like you can be a software developer in Australia, but you're not differentiating yourself as much as you would be if you can learn how to hire 20 software developers all around the world, right? So software development is a good skill, but hiring 20 software developers is probably an even better skill.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good advice. It sort of comes back to leverage. How can you leverage your skill and add a complementary skill to be a lot more effective? So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Rob. This has been really great. Now, where can people find out more about you and about Time Doctor and maybe even reach out and say thank you for what you've shared today?
Sure. Well, you can contact me at timedoctor.com or our conference, runningremote.com, which is going to be in Austin, Texas. But you can...
When's that running?
That's in April this year.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you can actually just reach out through the contact form on either of those websites. That's probably the easiest way to do it.
All right, great. We'll include links to those in the show notes so people can just click through. Now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd like to leave the listener for, you know, being a leader in their field or in innovation?
It's really having the vision and never giving up. I know you probably heard that before as a concept, but when I've listened to the stories of hundreds of successful entrepreneurs, the thing that I see that it's most in common is the ability to just keep going, the ability to just do whatever it takes and to just really just give it your all and not give up when things are getting tough. So I think that's something that's just absolutely, I just can't go past just as a recommendation. And when you do find something that's working, that's great and it's working, at that point, really scaling it hard, like going hard. I mean, I made some good money previously from some basically Google AdSense and affiliate marketing, etc. And I made a lot more money than some other people because I scaled it a lot better and I did it a lot more effectively. And I it was an opportunity and a niche, and several people saw this niche and I went after it and made a lot of money. Of course, there are people that did twice or even 10 times bigger than me. And there were people who did the same thing and they did 10 times worse than me or made 10 times less. So it's all a matter of how effectively you can scale and just go for it and really just maximize. When you get something that's actually working, maximize the returns from it.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. And of course, the one really effective way to do that is to get a lot of help and to be able to have a team around you that you can effectively manage, which was your answer to one of the previous questions.
Yeah.
All right. Well, finally, Rob, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Wow. Well, I think there's a friend of mine that might be a good fit. He has a business where he has an agency in the Philippines where he has like 1,000 staff in the Philippines. And he has a really amazing story where he's overcome cancer multiple. He's got this genetic condition where he gets cancer and he's had multiple operations where he's almost died. So he's overcome this challenge that most people would be insurmountable. So that's one person, but otherwise if you can get on a really big name, that's always great as well.
So what's your friend's name?
Chris Jankolowski.
Okay, well, we might get an introduction to Chris from you and reach out and have a chat with him.
Sure.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today so generously, Rob. I've had great fun chatting with you and learnt quite a lot about how to, really scale up. I mean, running teams in 31 countries. I think when I was in the corporate world, mind you, we didn't have the internet in those days, but I think I was up to about 10 or 11 countries at that time. So 31 is quite a big step up from that. It's been fascinating to learn how you've done that, how you've grown your business and how you manage all that. So thanks again, and all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Yeah, great to chat with you.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative conversation with Rob and took something away from his episode. I was really impressed by all the systems Rob has built to enable him to run such a diverse team across so many locations. I'd love to know what you took away from Rob's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Rob Rawson. That is RobRawson. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Rob Rawson. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Rob there, as well as links to the Time Doctor website, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Rob suggested we have a conversation with Chris Jankolowski, the founder and CEO of Remote Staff, on a future Innova Buzz podcast episode. So Chris, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Rob Rawson. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. But most importantly, it will enable you in less than 30 minutes to gain absolute clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or our help with producing your very own podcast, even launching your very own podcast if you don't yet have one, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we can set up a quick call to have a short conversation and find out whether we're a good fit for one another. Tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Mark Helpert, LinkedIn branding expert, and Dr. Catherine Lloyd, the founder and director of Maverick Minds. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe, innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.